Hooded.
Yeah, he would look cool hooded, considering. Right, hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of the Jolly Heretic. I trust you have had an interesting and stimulating week in which we continue down the road of the collapse of Britain and the collapse of America. Yes, we are slightly late, Alan's 9840. We were thinking about what to talk about. But anyway, so cheers, everybody. Cheers, Resident Hurligan Gurligan. Capis, Salu, Saludo, Prost, Proust,
Lachayim,
Nazrovya,
Yakida, Scrubyanan,
and Salu, and Slandra, and Slandravar, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We're, of course, on the Public House, which is on Mondays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, which discuss based science and psychology and things that are increasingly expunged from our woke joke universities. Cheers, Charlie Pepper. Oh, Charles Pepper these days. Cheers, Resident Poets. Cheers, Baron Everler. Cheers, Tarantism. Whatever it is there. 1, 2, 3. Cheers, Tommy M. 5023. And Slander and Slandravar and Hurligan Gurligan and all that. Thanks for the big screen, someone said. I don't know what's going on here. Please don't go on at me. I can't deal with this ridiculous nonsense. They're causing a lot of problems. There was an argument before the show. Paul called me an idiot, even though he doesn't have to deal with anything technical himself and doesn't even have a mobile phone and can't drive. So you know, but Lipton looks cold. He is. He's cold and he's lonely and like Heathcliff. And Salu, Carl Otter, and stream back north. Thank God for that. Thank God for that. It's still slightly irritating though if you're on this side of the screen because they have this kind of weird mobile phone shaped thing at the side. And if you try to get rid of it, then the screen goes really small. And Richard Sanders, Richard Jackson is a touch grandiose. Douglas Wright, 2143. Obviously, anyone.
I did. Can I just stop interrupt you there, Ed? I did point out that is Richard's ejaculatory phase.
Yes, that is. He had that. He had that photographed deliberately so he could so that the ladies could. Obviously, anyone that's going to be a narcissism expert and a narcissism coach is, of course, going to be a narcissist, as we can see. So there's no problem there. Right. There's all kinds of weird shit going on in the news at the moment, and I didn't know how to narrow it down. So I just asked Richard for a general theme, and he said, well, "What about sleepwalking? Is it totalitarianism?" But we're not really sleepwalking, are we? We're kind of jogging. We're kind of wide awake, sprinting headlong into the Starmer-shaped buttocks of totalitarianism. That's what we're doing into the Starmerite anus. Of totalitarianism, that is what we're doing. It's not sleepwalking. It's a bad metaphor, as somebody pointed out earlier. It's quite deliberate. If you continue voting, if you vote for the Labour Party in a context in which you're already highly totalitarian, which we did at the last election, in which the left have taken over all of the organs of culture completely, then of course you're. What do you think's going to happen?
Can I take immediate issue with that? Because it wasn't, yeah. Much as I despise the current Labour government, it was the Tories who allowed millions of people into the country undocumented. It was the Tories that oversaw COVID. It was the Tories that basically were in charge for the last 14 years of hyper decline. So inept and awful and malevolent as Labour are, they're just the inheritors of... Well, they always use that excuse, we inherited a mess. And they've successfully made the mess a lot, lot worse. But I just dispute this idea. I don't think politics has got anything to do with it anymore.
I agree with Paul, because I was reading the Labour policies for immigration, and they seem quite rigid. If you come here on a work permit or a student visa and you want to become a citizen, you'll have to wait for like 10 years instead of 5.
I think it was longer than that, wasn't it? But anyway, the Conservatives merely inherited a situation. Nice background, Richard. The Conservatives really, what was it they said in Yes Minister or Yes Prime Minister? If you're not very intellectual, then put books in the background, anything to distract from the lack of substance to your speech. Sort of Neil Kinnock idea, isn't it? But the Conservatives inherited a situation where all of Parliament's power had been taken away and farmed out to left-wing quangos that were constitutionally left-wing. And they needed to have a large majority to do something about it. And then once they had a large majority, then they concentrated on Brexit, and then COVID came in and then messed everything up. So I don't know how much I blame them. No, I do blame
them. No, right there, Ed, on the specific point of immigration, it was on Boris Johnson's watch. That's just factual. there was a huge increase in immigration of undocumented illegals under Boris Johnson.
No, true. Someone's pointing out in the chat that I celebrated when he was elected. I did, because I thought he's got an 80-seat majority. Even he can't fuck this up. And they're going to be able to do all kinds of cool stuff, like reverse everything that's happened since 1997. But no, they didn't do that. They just made it worse.
Well, can I ask you a question? If Reform won tomorrow with a landslide victory, in 3 years after that, do you think there will be any substantive difference in this country? Because I don't.
No, I don't think so either, no.
So the system is completely broken.
What we need is an ethno-nationalist option. We need a more extreme option than Reform. We must be further right.
No. Let me tell you what we need. We need to go to universities and lecture students. Shape the future. That's what we need.
God, yeah, because I tried that, Lipton. Look how that worked out.
I actually had a dream last night where Richard appeared on Good Morning with Richard and Judy, which for some reason existed in my dream.
Was he fully clothed?
Yeah. And then, yeah,
well, so don't believe you then.
Where our top fell off. And that guy, John Leslie, came and put it back on again. But no, but Richard was on there. And then Paul came on there. And so we were we have another special guest. And it's Paul Taylor. And Paul came on there, except he had like black hair for some reason in my dream. So the dream was developing into the dream of being on The View almost. But, it didn't quite happen, and then I woke up. But nevertheless, enough of my dreams. Which have been crushed over the last 30 years by the Labour Party and its successors. You know, everything that I thought would be, everything that I thought would occur by the time I was in my mid-40s. You think we were going to be in silver spacesuits and flying around, and it was going to be a wonderful life and so much better than it was in the 80s and on the 90s. And in fact, it's just so much worse.
Richard, can I ask you, why would ethno-nationalism solve anything, given that some of the most degenerate people in this country are white, wishy-washy idiots?
I think, so if we take away the idea that it's a right-wing versus left-wing issue, and let's assume, like good conspiracy theorists, which only I am here, I know, that all of that is a distraction to more of a globalist agenda, then you need something that can stand against that. And people aren't that bright, okay? Human beings don't think in a nuanced way. They can't do metacognition. They don't process hypothetical conditionals very well. So let's give them something simple. Blood and soil. Ethno-nationalism. If you are from Gambia, then you are a Gambian and Gambia is your country. If you are from China and so on and so forth, you need something that is going to push back against this that even very simple-minded people can wrap their heads around. Let's not forget, most of the human beings you come into contact with, if I say it wrong, Ed will correct me, must be between 85 and 115 in IQ. At 85 in IQ, you are so fucking stupid that no military in the world can use you because it's dangerous to try and use you. The problem we face is human stupidity. Let's give people a nice, simple answer, blood and soil, ethno-nationalism. You are from there. You are of that place. You have your ethnic identity. That is where you're from. That's where your genetics evolved. That is where you should be. With some minor amount of very, very highly skilled, reasonable immigration, like our good friend Lipton and me, who's a permanent foreign immigrant.
One of the things that I was hearing about the other day, I forget, I think it might have been Charlie Veach that was saying, the point that, you only had to go back a couple of generations for there to be, well, I mean, look at people like, you know, you Liverpudlians, like look what you are, what your ancestry is. And now you're kind of settled, almost British people.
We resent that actually, but go on.
But right. Okay. Not almost, no, like nowhere near British, but the point is that you've always had to move around due to economic conditions. There's periods where you're settled and there's periods where things change. And you move around. And what's happening at the moment is a pressure to do that. And yet you have people that will say, oh, no, no, this is my town. This is where I'm from. This is where my grandparents were from. This is where my great-grandparents were from. I'm not moving. Even as a child, I found this amazing. Like most of the kids at my school, their grandparents lived in the small town that school was in. Their grandparents. Whereas my grandparents were from other parts of the country. And that was a sort of a fundamental difference between.
Well, it's the free rider effect, isn't it? If everyone followed your advice, Finland, where you currently are, would be ruined. but you don't mind doing it because you're doing it, but no one else should do it.
Yes, that's true. That's true. I don't. It is object. Well, the worst is when it's the kind of British person that lives in Finland. My friend Tommy, who I think is watching this, will back me up because he goes on these forums, and they're like, "Oh, we love Finland. Yeah, we love Finland. Oh, it's great Finland. Oh, we've moved here for a different pace of life. Oh, we've moved here for low crime. Oh, no, you haven't. You know perfectly well why you fled the UK. You know why you fled the UK. Where's you're from in the UK? Manchester. All right, yeah. What's different between Oulu and Manchester? Do tell me." And then I knew this one guy, and he got upset with Oulu, and he was saying, "Oh, it's not multicultural enough. Oh, it's so racist. Oh, it's so racist. I can't bear it here anymore." And he went back to England. And where did he move to? Guildford, one of the whitest and richest places in the country. And he said, when I said about him about this, he said, "Oh, yeah, well, I can go to London whenever I like. I'm only an hour on the train." Like, that's the point. You can go there for all the good things about London, but not actually live there and experience the bad things about London. So Guildford is the best of both worlds, isn't it? That's the wonderful thing about Guildford.
Like it's Glasgow. Where I was staying in Glasgow was really white.
Yeah, but Lipton, Scotland has an innate advantage that no one who is above 85 IQ would ever voluntarily live there. So you're never going to get high-level immigration because it's an absolute hellhole of a place.
But people, what's wrong with it? What's wrong with that?
And cheap. I love Scotland.
What's wrong with ethno-nationalism?
It doesn't make any sense. Well, even if it did, like, it's never been tried and, you know, failed disastrously before at all. Even if it worked, it's too late to do it now. You can't put the genie back in the bottle.
Oh, yes, you can. If you have enough cars, you can do it.
If you have enough will, Paul, if you have enough will, you can get that genie and you can stick it back in the bottle. I mean, what would happen if the policies they're talking about is remigration, this policy that there's now people increasingly talking about? So if you think like, but yet we've changed. The country has changed over 30 years and attitudes have changed and the pace of life has sort of sped up and people have got lazier. So I'm thinking that the knock-on effect of this remigration being anything other than extraordinarily slow would be disastrous. I mean, for example, if you only have to go back to the 80s for the majority of people to do gardening. But the majority of at least of people of my grandparents' generation would supplement their income by growing food in their gardens. That's why even council houses were given gardens, often quite generous gardens. In which to grow stuff. And now we have a situation where nobody knows how to do that. It's considered a kind of unusual, slightly edgy hobby to grow your own food.
Does it count if you have a gardener, Ed?
No, that's the point, that you do the gardening yourself.
Why?
Because you just would. Because
I had ancestors who were peasants in Ireland. I evolved so I wouldn't be a peasant. I don't garden.
Right, and that would be a problem.
Do you garden, you peasant? No, it wasn't a leading question.
I don't garden, no. But my,
no,
I
do so yet another rank hypocritical statement.
No, but what I was moving on to from there was that I do cook, and according to surveys I was reading recently, increasingly young people just don't know how to cook. They don't cook.
Well, if we can have a conversation about all the things young people don't know how to do anymore, it's going to be all nice, isn't it?
Have that conversation because it's quite extraordinary, isn't it? If you consider then what you would do if you took away this cheap pool of labour, which we have, of these immigrants that ride around on motorbikes or bicycles or whatever delivering food, then the immediate hits to people would be incredible because a lot of people are so decadent that they are used to being. There's no such thing as cooking. They're used to just going on an app, which shouldn't be allowed to exist anyway.
Like Uber Eats.
Yeah, and ordering food on Uber Eats, and that's what they do.
Yeah, have you heard of a microwave ad?
But again, that is just decadence.
But people would survive by eating microwave food. Cooking is no longer, for these people, a necessary skill. And Lipton is the chief degenerate on this channel who always has Thai meals brought to him every week without fail. When was the last time you cooked a meal, Lipton, you degenerate?
This week I was roasting food in the oven.
Any particular food?
Like kebabs, duck.
Kebabs?
Yes.
Did you buy the kebabs?
Yeah, I bought them.
So you didn't cook, you reheated.
Sorry, Lipton, who were you spit roasting with this week?
Marcel.
Okay.
I like beans and kebabs and duck. I just go to the supermarket and I put them into the oven and they roast. I give them 30 minutes or 1 hour and they roast and I eat.
Right, so you don't cook, do you? You reheat.
Yeah, or I buy juice and snacks and stuff.
So you're emblematic of every young person on this country and it's all your fault.
Right, what I'm saying is think through what would happen. I suppose we could just use ChatGPT to ask it. But what it seems to me would happen is there would be serious problems. We've changed the whole nature of society, for example, so that we're reliant on the internet. The internet cuts out the original infrastructure that was originally there in place of the internet. Yes, life was slower, but it wasn't slow as it would be now if you took away the internet. I mean, we used to have, like when I was a kid, the postman would come three times a day, reliably. And there'd be libraries and there'd be citizens' advice bureaus.
I don't care for libraries. Look, no, with the internet, you can go online and type in Edward Dutton, Spiteful Mutant, and download the book for free.
Well, all right. Yeah, but I wrote that book on contract, so I don't get any money out of that book. But I do get money out of work eugenics, so yes. I'm, that's objectionable.
Yeah, I downloaded that book too for free.
Richard, well, can you cook?
But you wouldn't like anything I make.
Why?
I can cook chicken, steak, salmon, rice, and vegetables. And if you force me, I can make you a turkey burger from scratch, but I don't enjoy the process. I can do it. But all the stuff I make is that bro food, protein food.
Ed and I are the only gourmands of the four of us.
Yeah.
Do you both cook? Do you cook, Paul?
Oh, I'm a massive cook because my beloved wife doesn't really bother. So I would starve to death and I am pathologically greedy. So in order to feed my greed, I have to be a good cook.
I have a lot of respect for cooks. I have a few good chefs, trained chefs in the family, and it amazes me. It's like wizardry, magic to me when people can put something together.
What's the weirdest thing you've cooked, Paul?
Well, I went through phases. It's not particularly weird, but I made proper sourdough bread from scratch, and I had an ongoing, I had to feed the yeast, so to speak. It's not a euphemism. I've made proper Chinese food where you feather the meat, you marinate it in baking soda and various sauces, mirin sauces and stuff. I've done curries from scratch with all the original proper spices. Got a really good rice cooker, which is an essential because it makes amazing rice, whether it's for Indian or Chinese food.
Yeah.
And basically, I can't think of many things I can't cook or I haven't tried to.
I've cooked hare.
Yeah.
No, it's quite nice. It just basically tastes like chicken. It's kind of like
I thought you meant you'd cooked human hair. Sorry.
No, I meant hair as in the hair on the mountain.
Oh, because I once made someone a sourdough pancake and I'd recently shaved and he saw a load of my beard hair in his pancake and had the audacity to complain.
I was once at a wedding and there was a pubic hair in a one of the starters. It really did look like a pubic hair. I don't know how it got there, but I can imagine a hair off a person's head falling into one of the starters, but a pubic hair is just peculiar. And
not if they don't like it.
Animals like you, it's because animals like you won't shave their fucking pubes off like a civilized person.
Richard, you don't understand. My basement, my rules.
this shave your pubes. Yeah, I could. There's that thing. Is it called Love at First? What's it called? That program?
Naked Attraction.
And they stand there naked. And I noticed that the opposite of Love is Blind. And I noticed that all of them had shaved. All of them, even the men, were fully denuded.
And you walk. Yeah. You wonder why we're sleepwalking into totalitarianism. That's where it started.
Exactly. Degeneracy is where it stopped. But no, if we go back to if the policy of mass deportations, which is what serious people like Rupert Murdoch or whatever. Are now talking about would have enormous. I mean, it would. I'm not saying I'm against the idea, but I'm just saying it would have enormous negative economic consequences very quickly. I mean, even things like what Paul, you were mentioning about universities. Let's go on to that. But before I do, I was watching this program recently. They just came up on YouTube, and it's like it was quite an old program, sort of like 18 years old. About basically, it's a fly on the wall documentary about airports. and it was about Heathrow and Gatwick, and they sort of flip between the two. And again and again and again, this is about 18 years ago, you've got Indians coming in on very obviously like dodgy visas to colleges that seem to be made up, or at least they don't do anything. Like their own, their existence, their purpose is to give people who should be in the country illegally and are working illegally documents stating, oh yes, this person's attendance at our lectures is 82%. And then she asks the guy, well, what did you learn at these lectures? He's got no idea what his course is about. He's got no idea what his course is called. He can't name any of the lecturers, right? These are scam colleges. These are scam colleges.
They also have fake journals. Indians are known for fake journals. If you Google lying in Indian culture, that will generate actual academic articles talking about lying in Indian culture.
I certainly get emails every day asking me to write articles without payment. And you should never pay to have an article published in a journal, by the way, for various scientific journals, that are particularly scientific journals that are not in my area at all, like chemistry.
Me too.
I've got nothing to add to these journals. And the very fact that they're emailing me asking for articles implies that they're bogus.
Richard, that's why we need to have a serious conversation about the failures of multiculturalism and why we don't need third world immigrants. Third world immigrants don't enrich countries.
No, but
they're tribal and they're known for scamming.
What was it you were discussing last week or a couple of weeks ago about the Lotus Eaters and somebody that was presenting something on there? They increase the labor pool, thus reducing labor costs. And this has some positive effect on the economy, it seems, at least in the short term, before the debts are called in and they require healthcare and whatever. It keeps a pyramid scheme going.
Well, it's more than a pyramid scheme in the sense that if you think of nearly every major northern industrial city, once it deindustrialized, what kept them going? And it coincided with deindustrialization in the 80s, and Blair expanded the university sector. So somewhere like Liverpool has 4 or 5 university stroke colleges now, Leeds, 3 or 4, Manchester, all these places, that's taxi drivers, that's local shops, that's accommodation. If you took, and you notice massively when the students go away in the summer, how the cities are different. If you took all those students away, what are the economic drivers for northern cities? So it's, yes, it's a Ponzi scheme, but it's also an essential Ponzi scheme for a country that doesn't have any manufacturing base anymore.
Okay. I agree with you. Imagine I'm a fascist dictator. What could I do that would bring manufacturing back to the UK? Is that fixable?
No.
It would
no
take
one has a... any rights. No one can say no. If you say no, you go to the gulag or you get shot.
Well, I just remember having a very frustrating conversation. It didn't even get nasty because it was beyond that. But a couple of colleagues, they were bemoaning something in the news, and I asked the very naive question. It was partly about immigration, but we take huge amounts of nurses and doctors from around the world. And even from a woke left-wing point of view, it's immoral. We're taking doctors and nurses from developing parts of the world who need them. Why are we doing that? Because we don't train our own. Why don't we do that? Because we're in a Ponzi scheme. And on it goes. So my first answer would be, you need to take an economic hit, but you need to train whatever colour people are. You need to train British citizens to be doctors and nurses.
Okay.
Sorry, go on.
I really like the phrasing. It sounded like you were saying, brothers and sisters, this will hurt for a while, but finally we will fight our way through to freedom. You will all suffer, but we will all suffer as one for the good of future generations in this country. We would take an economic hit. There's no will to take an economic hit without an iron fist.
But except, Richard, people are. So the only thing that helps me get to sleep at night is knowing that all the woke youngsters who really cheese me off are never going to own their own house. They'll be paying their university fees back for decades. And they have no career prospects, no pensions to look forward to.
You are a bitter, bitter, resentful man.
Well, I didn't ask them. I didn't ask them to create this woke hellhole. They've created it. Reap the whirlwind.
No, Richard, there is an argument that if we clamp down on immigration, then the economy will plummet. That is not true. It is not true because even when you look at skilled immigration, Western workers are more productive than non-Western workers. So, for example, America has the best computer scientists, according to studies that were done in that were produced by leading journals. In India, 80% of their engineers are unfit for the knowledge economy. They're less likely to write a code correctly.
Paul is right, though. Like, even thinking about what the life of a Gen Z person is going to be like at 65.
And could you just reply to the idiots in the chat who are saying, oh, your mob, the boomers did it?
No.
The people who've created part of this problem are the current generation of parents. And the current generation of teenagers are absolutely beyond help. And who brought them up? Not my generation.
We did. Gen X did that.
Yeah. If you're going to blame anyone, the people saying the boomers are at fault, look at the absolute inability.
Well, is Gen X. So, I mean, it's like, this is, again, this concept of
boomer. I've witnessed people bringing up kids with no boundaries. They've indulged their every whim. And then they turn around and say, well, we're in this mess. How did it happen? Well, look at your own parenting, for starters.
Right. Look at the thing. Like, let me give you an example which really struck me as a person that's 20 years older than some of these people I talk to that are Gen Z. That their parents take them to university interviews. And in fact, they don't even have university interviews. Their parents take them to university open days and sit there with them. And they're like 17, 18 years old. And I reacted to that. Just, what the actual fuck? What? And we've had this discussion before. Your parents might drop you off at the, I don't know, Exeter University theology department interview or myself in mind here. I'm like, okay, I'll piss off then, go to the pub, I'll see you in a couple of hours. The idea that they stay with you and sit with you and during the presentation...
Worse than that, Ed. They're the ones who ask the questions. I had to routinely say, can any prospective students ask a question, please? Parents, please don't speak. And I was told by the administration to stop doing that. That's because they actually, and when they'd say something, they'd look at their parents before they said something.
And they have menu anxiety. They don't like the idea of just going to a restaurant and ordering food. They have to look at the menu online in advance and then see what they want. I mean, they're just extraordinary people.
They're stupid. I think they're really stupid, and they're obsessed with what I would call shallow connections and other people liking them for simply being lazy. So a typical millennial would show up to an interview 20 minutes late and then post it on Twitter and say, oh my God, I was late. And other people would say, wow, that's so relatable. It's so stupid.
Yes, they seem to have no concept of doing something on time. Yeah, that I've experienced quite recently, actually.
Well, can we take a step back, Ed? I understand, I believe in human responsibility. So these Gen X, you know, idiots, I get confused by the generations because I'm senile. But the current teenagers, bad as they are we at any point going to say, well, who brought them up? So I'm taking it as a given that they're woke, they're inept, they're childish, they take no responsibility for themselves, but they didn't grow up in a vacuum. They were brought up without boundaries, without standards, without discipline. And guess what? It's all gone to pot. And let's blame the boomers. It's pathetic.
Yes, the boomers made a sensible financial decision. Housing was cheap. Let's buy a house. That's what they did. And the idea that you should be punished or taxed or have money taken away from you for making a sensible financial decision is extremely stupid. They made a sensible financial decision. That's what they did. And yes, unfortunately, it was that generation, Blair and whatever, that opened up mass immigration. But that's you can't just blame the boomers for that. Everybody was sucked into the death cult, into the narcissist cult of Tony Blair in the late 90s. The country went...
And someone said in the chat, which I agree with, it's not just the parents, the technology. We could have a long chat about the role of technology, but I totally agree that's true. I spent my professional life researching technology. It's why I don't have a mobile phone, not because I'm a Luddite, but I know precisely the effect they have on your life. So I chose, I don't want that. but the way in which parents have failed to create boundaries around technology, the way in which school administrations, I read somewhere that a school was thinking of stopping their children having mobile phones. And I was thinking, what? So they were allowed to have them initially in school. And you wonder why they're not paying attention. This is beyond a joke.
No, the rule at my school, apparently, well, we didn't have them. Mobile phones only started being a problem basically when I started in the sixth form.
Yeah, but how thick you have to be not to realise that in a school environment, letting kids have mobile phones is a recipe for disaster.
With internet on and with cameras on, it's an absolute recipe for disaster in a school where, of course, there's bullying. The idea of having every child wandering around with a camera.
Well, that's another thing. Sorry while I'm on a roll, but I remember reading about these parents moaning about their kid being bullied. So the suggestion was take them off social media. Oh, I can't do that. That's where they're being bullied. Yeah, but they'd be devastated about their social media. Oh, the social media that they're saying they're mentally ill of because they're bullied. And you go round and round. You just send them to a karate club. Make them go out and bloody go on a hike. Do something.
They can't do things
but
like that.
Some, no, I don't support bullying. There are some lessons that we should learn. One, life is not easy. You won't always get what you want and you will struggle. End of story. I don't like bullying, but sometimes it's a part of life.
Yeah, but Lipton, to be fair to the little woke monsters, being bullied online gets this. It's like why the way society has gone, because the slightest little disagreement gets exponentially increased beyond any rationality. So bullying online could be terrible, but if you're not online, explain to me how you're going to get bullied. But there's this given that you have to be online to have a life now. I reject it totally.
Yeah, but they don't. That's where the kids.
Well, fine then. Right. So demand your right to be online and stop whining about being mentally ill and bullied. There's a causality involved. And parents, stop moaning about your kids being mentally ill if you've brought them up to use their mobile phone every second of the day. Take some responsibility for what your kids should be able to do.
But I mean, I would never have happened because, as you know, I'm against all change. And that generally serves things. The Marquis of Salisbury, I forget exactly how he put it, but he's Lord Salisbury. He said, you know, our policy should be to avoid change, as all change is generally for the worse. And so our policy should be to ensure there's as little change as possible. And I think that is an absolutely excellent way of seeing the world. And it's true. If it's a new idea, everyone was in the 90s, late 90s, mobile phone, you should get a mobile phone. And when we started at university, like about a third of people had mobile phones. It wasn't good enough to just have the college internal post and the phone on your corridor. Oh, no, you've got to have a mobile phone. And what are the consequences now? I remember I was walking around in Durham and this woman came up to me and asked me to do, you know, market research. This is year 2000. And what it was on was the idea of having the internet on your phone, having a camera on your phone. And I found this incomprehensible. I said, surely if I want to take a photograph, I'll just bring my camera. And he's like, aye, but the camera will be in your phone. I was like, well, but why? Camera is for photographs. Phone is for telephone calls.
To be fair, though, can I just roll back a bit on what I've said? Because when I've wanted to send inappropriate photographs, I've had to go all the way to a photographic studio, and I found that very inconvenient.
Well, exactly. And think about the easy access you have to porn in a way that in the old days you'd have to go to, the corner shop and go to the porn section and the top shelf and whatever. Remember what that was like? Reader's Wives and all that stuff, all that good stuff. Remember, Paul?
I thought my generation had longer arms precisely because of that.
It is true, there is an adaptive evolution.
You can talk about this.
I'm sure that's right. Yeah, that they had to. Well, they wouldn't have been for a genetic reasons, but it would have been an environmental trait, wouldn't it? They're stretching all the time to get the porn from the top shelf to get Reader's Wives or Razzle or whatever. There was a news agent. I say news agent in Aberdeen, between Old Aberdeen and New Aberdeen, and it was almost completely dedicated to porn. I don't know why it wasn't legally a porn shop. It was overwhelmingly porn. And then a few copies of the Daily Record and the Scotsman, and some sweets, and that was it. But that was his business model. It was
so basically anything sticky was sold in that shop.
Yes, but that's the correct. So I don't know how he managed it, but he did. He was. I assume it's
Richard. Are you having a stroke? Or are you pondering?
Somebody saying Brits can't wrestle and only the Americans and people from the Caucasus region can. You must not have heard of catch wrestling, my dear fellow. Well, yes, we can wrestle.
But they do wrestling in American high schools, don't they, in a way they don't do here.
That's true. And in the Caucasus.
Big
no,
Daddy
that's
was
not that's not wrestling. Not Big Daddy. No.
That's not wrestling.
That's why men in pants throwing themselves around the ring.
Why is it that when they refer to Tommy Robinson in the newspaper, they always say Tommy Robinson, real name Stephen Yaxley Lennon, right?
Oh, because they think it's fucking clever. Like we don't all know what his name is.
When they talked about Big Daddy, they never said Big Daddy, real name Shirley Crabtree. They just said he was Big Daddy.
So they just accepted it.
None of this real naming.
It's quite ironic, isn't it, Ed, since that's your nickname for Richard?
Mm-hmm. Personally, I blame Ed, Paul, and Richard because I have been sending emails to universities and one of them said, okay, we're not doing talks now, but tell me about yourself. And I just said, well, I'm from Jamaica. I didn't get into details, but I blame the three of you for not lecturing to students at universities.
Yeah, because I've never done this, Lipton.
No, not a lecture, not a school lecture, like a talk, like go to university to talk.
Going back to the Ponzi scheme and the way that I think it's an interesting point that universities, by bringing in foreign students and their tuition fees and so forth, are propping up the economies of various northern and Midlands towns. Nottingham University is generally regarded as a pretty good university, a pretty respectable university. So I do find it extraordinary to hear that they're shutting down their modern languages department. Paul, you messaged us about this.
Yeah, they're proposing they shut down not just one, but all of their modern languages. And this comes on the back of when I was leaving Leeds, they saved it, but at a much smaller level. Leeds was getting rid of its classics department. This is despite the fact that the main building at Leeds, Parkinson, that goes up to Parkinson Steps, is built as a classical temple architecture. But they were getting rid of the classics. So this was years ago they were starting to do this. But what university worthy of the name doesn't teach modern languages? It's an absolute outrage. And one of the interesting aspects of it, I don't know what you think, Ed, and Richard, your language skills are much better than mine. But one of the aspects I don't think lay people realise is most university departments teaching languages devote a lot of their time to the history and literature of those countries and languages. It's not just about basic language skills. So it's not just language, it's a whole range of human knowledge that's been sacrificed on the altar of finance. It's what. So why is it a university anymore? It's beyond me.
If a university is not offering courses like philosophy and history and literature, it is not a university. Secondly, many of these universities will quickly shut down their Western civilization programs, but they don't want to get rid of feminist studies or queer studies. And Paul is right about language. When I was in high school, my literature teacher, for some strange reason, knew a lot of philosophy and American history because she was teaching American literature and she was well-read. And when we were reading The Great Gatsby, she could contextualize the socio-political context of the text.
But not just that. I accept my conversational language skills are awful just because I don't practice. But when I went back to Madrid, this was, I'm guessing, about 8 years ago, 10 years ago, I hadn't studied Spanish for about 30 years. But I'm chatting away to a taxi driver about a Lorca play, Yema. And there's a line in it, Yo soy un campo seco donde cabanerando mil perros de bueyes y lo que tú me das es un vaso de agua de pozo. I'm like a dry field that's been ploughed by 1,000 pairs of oxen, and what you offer me is a glass of water. And this taxi driver's pissing himself laughing because otherwise I'm speaking pidgin Spanish. But my point is, you learn literature and it stays with you. It helps your language skills last for decades. You learn conversational Spanish on a 6-month intensive course. Unless you keep that going, you'll forget it. So there's continuity, there's tradition, there are all these things. And we're losing it on the altar of...
The worst thing is it just shows you that this university is not a centre of learning. If it was, it would put these academic considerations above money. And it would find a way, even if the lecturers were forced to be prostitutes or escorts, it would find a way to ensure that it could keep open the classics department. But it hasn't done that. It's purely financial. I'm under the impression that even Oxford and Cambridge, even the really good universities, are now overwhelmed by Chinese students paying massive tuition fees and indeed influencing the university, because there's a degree to which they're kind of working for the Communist Party. And there's just a whole system became corrupt. The whole university was corrupt, and it was tuition fees that started that. The second they brought in £1,000 tuition fees, which was the year before my school year, the second they brought that in, I think that was the end.
Well, it was hilarious. I was teaching an undergraduate third year course, and I was asked, would I take some master's students onto my course as some type of, they had some weird scam whereby they got partial credit. And I said no, and they said why, and I said because they couldn't handle it. So you've got, and this was factual, I won't say what nationality they're from, but there were a certain range of students who could not physically, and maybe it's my accent, I accept that, they couldn't understand what I was saying at the most basic level. And they're master's students, they're getting a degree that's higher than an undergraduate degree. And when I said I can't take them because they wouldn't be able to, you know, they'd struggle too much, they said, okay, fair enough. Wouldn't that cause an administrator to question something?
Well, I have a better example. After getting into Glasgow, you arrive other students, and all students who are not from Western countries, they do a relatively easy English test. You cannot fail it. If you fail it, you just reset it. So the first time I did it, I got 18 out of 20, so I didn't need to do it again. And I was assisting two particular students with a test, and it's one of those tests that's flexible, it's always changing. And one student did it by himself, and he kept failing. Now, this student has a BA from a university in an English-speaking country. The country was once under British rule, and he kept failing the test. Eventually, I helped him, and he passed. But it was a multiple choice test, and he failed it repeatedly. And his country, they speak English in his country, and he has a university degree. I won't say the color of his skin either, but yes, he kept failing.
Yeah, I knew a case when I was at Aberdeen University of this Chinese woman, middle-aged Chinese woman, who was doing apparently a master's degree in law or something like this. And she could barely speak English. And yet she'd come back all proud. Look, I got a first in this essay. And I'd have a look at it. I'm like, well, you didn't write this, did you? This is clearly a product of one of these essay mills. I don't know if you still get them. What with ChatGPT, you don't really need them, I guess. But you used to have.
No. You can still pay for the service. My ex girlfriend did it. She can barely speak fucking English, and she got a full degree from a university in London in marketing, technological marketing. But she can't speak English. So I said to her, how are you sat in the lectures? She said, I understand as much as I can, and then I asked people for advice afterwards. Mm-hmm. And I found evidence that she'd been paying people to write essays for her. And she, at one point, she said, will you write an essay for me? And I said, absolutely fucking not. If you can't do the degree, don't do the fucking thing.
Right. But that just shows you. As
I can't believe she's your ex.
Back to four, but yeah, like Richard was not necessarily thinking with his brain, Paul. He was thinking with...
No, I contradict you, Ed. Surprisingly and bizarrely, Richard was thinking with his brain, and that's why I was really taken back by what he said. If he hadn't been thinking with his brain, he would have written the essay for her.
That's a good point. Or it could be a jellyfish, because jellyfish have different like nodes over their brain, like scattered around their body. So, and they're capable of learning, jellyfish. They're capable of learning from experience, but they don't have a central, they don't even have a central nervous system. It's just kind of distributed around their body. So, in a sense, they can kind of think with their legs or think with whatever other part of their body.
That sounds a bit like my ex, actually.
Yeah, was your ex an octopus or a jellyfish or cephalopod? There is that film on Netflix called My Octopus Teacher, which is about a white South African man who literally falls in love with a female octopus. Mm. But the one thing he can't give her is children, because they're just too genetically different. And in the end, a male of her own species finds her, and of course she's beguiled by him. Mm. And he's really jealous. He's really jelly. of this male that has his bird, or rather his octopus. And then, of course, they die. Once they give birth, they put all their energy into giving birth to the babies, and then they die. And he was very sad. But at one point, she came up to him and hugged him. I mean, they really did build a strong bond, did this man and his octopus.
That's revolting.
But there's always that species divide.
An eight-armed hug.
An eight-armed hug, yeah.
Didn't the Japanese used to do drawings of that in feudal times?
They did drawings of women with octopus tentacles coming out of their vaginas, yes. In fact, a friend of mine was in Japan, and he was in a porn shop, and he told me there is a whole section to the shop dedicated to tentacle porn.
I'm talking pre-hentai, though. I think it goes a way back. Anyway, we're probably at the halfway mark or something, I believe.
We're halfway through. Those of you that are new, hello, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We are, of course, on the Public House, which on Mondays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, which discuss based science, research, increasing expansion from our woke joke universities and psychology and narcissism and that. If you are new, would you do me a favor? Would you please subscribe? Would you subscribe on the Jolly Heretic? And would you subscribe on my Substack, which is jollyheretic.com? Where I put all the most base stuff that I can't put on YouTube, where I put my blog, my films I make, interviews, all kinds of stuff. If you like what I do, you can support for the cost of a pint of beer a month. Next to me, we have Mr. Lipton Matthews. Say hello, Lipton.
Hello.
And please subscribe on Lipton's channel, and that is simply Lipton Matthews. And then below we have Mr. Richard Grannon. Some of you may be watching on his channel now. He of the Richard Grannon channel, of the Richard Grannon Philosophy channel, and of some new channel, rather, that he's developing. I don't know the details at the moment, but I did an interview for it the other day. So subscribe there. Richard's very studious today. He's reading or something. He's reading.
I'm reading about tentacle porn and its history.
And then finally, we have Dr. Paul Taylor, who calls himself Rolf Shipman, because he looks a bit like Rolf Harris and a bit like Harold Shipman. And his YouTube channel is Readers of the Lost Art. So go over there and subscribe. We have a resident poet here at the Jolly Heretic, Mr. Quim, and he has written the following poem in light of tonight's subject, which we seem to have deviated from a little bit, but never mind. The state of the UK regime, as part of an unholy scheme, is totalitarian as well as barbarian. It seems like a terrible dream. Thank you very much, Mr. Quim.
Well done.
If you'd like Mr. Quinn's poetry, which you should, then he has a book of Jolly Heretic poetry, which is available on the old Amazon. Okay, we have a question from AdhorNay3333, and he says, Zoomer here, all correct what you are saying. Small groups of mostly competent Zoomer men are grouping together, going to events, etc. No competition. I don't know quite what you're getting at there, sir, but I assume you're implying there's some kind of backlash among the Zoomers and that some of you are becoming more based.
Aren't Gen Z becoming very based and very right-wing, or was that a myth that was dispelled?
I'm certainly under the impression that a subsection of them is doing that. They're not as right-wing as they should be. Eric Kaufman looked at this, that they're not as... The people that are of a different generation are predictably more right-wing as you get more right-wing with age, or predictably more left-wing, rather, if they're younger, than the previous generation. And this has broken down among the Zoomer...
Sorry to interrupt, Dad, but can you define the generations? I lose track of who qualifies in what era.
Well, it's pretty stupid, isn't it? Because it's absurd to have a kind of binary division of generations. And so it only roughly works as a typology. But they've changed it across time and whatever. My understanding is that Boomer is 1945 to about 1965, and then Gen Z is something like 1965 Gen X is 65 to like the early 80s. And then millennial is early 80s to the mid 90s. And then Zoomer is mid 90s to, I don't know when, I don't know, the
2012.
Is it true that it's as late as that, really? And then there's probably some new one called the
Alpha.
Alpha generation. They're just using a new Spunky Alpha.
Spunky Alphas.
But it's very silly, because I was absolutely convinced when I was a kid, and people said so, and it all went without saying, that I was Generation Z. And suddenly they introduced this... Generation X. And suddenly they introduced this concept of millennial, and then suddenly I was dragged into that. And I always regarded myself throughout my whole teenage years, then people would talk about this crap. Oh, yeah, you're Generation X.
But so, you're difficult to place, Ed, because you use so much oil of Ulay.
Yes, oil of Ulay and Brill cream and other such things. Yes, I admit that I'm perhaps in some respects slightly old fashioned for my generation. Yes, I concur with that. I think that's important. I hate change. So how can I say I hate change and yet I don't embrace change? We should embrace change. No, change is a threat. Like, things are the way they are. Leave it alone. Just leave it. Like abolishing the House of Lords. What was the point of that? It was working perfectly bloody well. Leave it alone. Leave it. We had hereditary peers. We had hereditary peers since we started Parliament in 1215.
Exactly.
Some of our greatest prime ministers were hereditary peers. These people were often farmers. They know how to run a business or whatever. You know.
Yeah, leave it alone.
What?
Leave it alone. I like the aristocracy.
Leave it alone. Just leave it alone. But no, you've got all these people like Paul, who probably vote Labour, saying, oh, it's not fair. Oh, it's not fair. Oh, what right have they got? Well, at the height of the British Empire, we had the House of Lords, and we were doing pretty well for ourselves. So leave it. Like, it's quite simple. Like all this devolution, Scotland, Wales, or what was the bloody point of that? Leave it. Leave it alone. And what Boris should have done with his 80-seat majority is just undone everything that had been done since the 2nd of May 1997. Everything. An act of oblivion. That is what we need, an act of oblivion. And if we imposed that, then see how quickly the civil servants would be fighting to rescue certain pieces of legislation that you don't push them into oblivion. And yeah, that would tell you, those are the ones
that are look at Devil's Advocate, look at the recent Supreme Court judgment on trans issues and the idea that you need a Supreme Court to tell you a 6'5" bloke with a beard isn't a woman is ridiculous. But even when the Supreme Court taught us what we'd known for 2,000 or more years, the people are ignoring it, the trans activists. So what does it even help when clarity is achieved? These people are so dogmatic, there's no reaching them.
No, the solution is that they should be jailed. That's my solution to that problem.
Or shot. Why feed them? Why feed them?
Certainly, I think it should be a criminal offence to call someone racist or Nazi, because basically that's inciting violence against them. So laws should also be consistent. If you're going to have laws that are anti-free speech, and we have them, then I think it seems to be perfectly consistent. If you call someone a racist or a Nazi, you're basically saying you're dehumanising them, you're basically inciting violence against them, so you should be arrested. You're inciting violence by calling someone using that word, or any synonym for that word. So
I do think that just as I wish on television every time someone on the left calls people far right, I wish they would be called by their opponents Maoists or something similar. There needs to be pushback. The idea that there's far right and then everybody else is normal who disagrees with them, that needs to be addressed.
Mutants. They need to be called mutants. They need to be called what they are.
Yeah, but that's not going to happen, is it? But I think on polite television, you could call someone a Maoist and upset them, and then you could have the debate.
Yes, and emphasize how many people Mao killed. Sorry?
I think, have you taken something tonight, Richard? You're very, what's the word?
I feel very chilled out.
Docile. He's very docile.
Do you know why? I'll tell you why. I've finally made a decision. I'm going to live somewhere. And once I've made that decision, I know where I'm going to live. I'm going to move to Ireland. I'm going to live in Ireland. A lot, like 30 to 40% of my stress was just not knowing where I was going to live. And now I know I'm going to move back to Ireland. I like Ireland. I feel quite, what's the word, Ed? Relaxed or something like that, you know?
Richard, isn't Ireland going to do your head in, given how ridiculously liberal that's become?
So then when I go there, I'll have to fire again, because I'll be really angry with the policies of Ireland. No, I will join my brethren in Ireland and fight the good fight from there. Come out, you black and tans, come out and fight me.
Wanted to say that this young lady, she was beaten by a man, and then on her phone, she referred to him in a demeaning manner. She used the F word and she was charged.
In Ireland or in the UK?
In the UK, she called him the F word. F-A-G-G. I can't say it.
Oh, is that a word you can't say now? That word, unbelievable. God.
Yes. Yes.
That's we used to eat that. We used to eat that at dinner time.
That used to be used.
My mother gave me faggot. My mother gave me faggots a few times a month.
Ed's eating his fair share.
Mother, I can't. Come on, we need the money.
We need the money so we can finish. The
only way we're going to solve this problem, Ed, is if we buy, let's say, 200 copies of your books and distribute them to university students.
Yeah, but you've been stealing. You owe me basically a couple of quid. That's what I get per copy of that book. So that's my royalties. You've stolen, Lipton.
Well, I also downloaded your book on Islam, your book on ethnocentrism.
You've stolen about 20 quid from me.
Yeah. Oh, Ed, it's reparations.
Anyway, we have some more questions. Yes, Abnor Hay 3333 says, to what Paul was saying, so many of us are woke and useless or abortive. Older guys who moan about us on a whole love when they find a Zoomer who good. Thank you for that. I mean, this is what I mean, that your education is so bad that you miss out fundamental verbs in your super chat.
Did you hear us talking about the importance of linguistics and grammar and the ability to express yourself?
About not at university. About sort of
am I misinterpreting? I thought I was being chatted up in that message.
I think you were, yeah. We were concerned
about linguistic ambiguity between a whole and a whole. I think that's what confused you.
We were concerned about a middle-ranking university losing its linguistics, its languages, modern languages departments, and that happens. But anyway, thank you, sir. Thank you. Let's read it again. So what Paul was saying, so many of us are woke and useless or aborted. Or aborted, God. Older guys who moan about us on the whole, love they find a Zoomer who good. Yes, I know a few good Zoomers, not very many, but most Zoomers that I know are kind of quite up themselves, to be honest. But I know a few good Zoomers. I can't deny I've met at conferences a few people born from the late 90s onwards who are all right. We've had some on this show, haven't we? We've had a couple of Zoomers on the show. So we've had. Jess, we had Jess on the show a while ago. Jess is a Zoomer.
Yes, she's a good girl.
403. And then I think that girl we had, Birdie, I think she's born like 98, so I guess that counts as a Zoomer. So we've had a few of them on. Poe, last week, is not a Zoomer. She would be earlier. She's, I believe, born 95 or something, 94. So that would be millennial, I suppose.
Which tribe are you representing?
Tribe from where?
You look very tribal with your towel wraps around.
No, I'm just a normal person in the UK. I like
who's UK. Cold.
Charles cold, Pepper,
presumably.
Charles Pepper has sent me the £20 that Lipton owes me, and he says, bloke in a pub toilet, Jamaican next to him. Chap looks at his knob. How did you get it like that? Tie a brick to it, man. 2 days later, how did you get on, man? Well, I'm halfway there. It's gone black.
Very good. Very good.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pepper. And then from Scutmilk, we have Ed looks drawable like post-Waterloo Napoleon. Thank you very much. Yes, I've people have done drawings of me in the past. Maybe the work for the police that do those sketches, you know, those e-fits. They've drawn me.
It's very difficult to draw a micro penis, though.
I suppose your wife must be a brilliant artist. Right, now, next question is from Adhorne333. And he says character limit apologies. That's quite all right, sir. Never mind. So apparently I put up a video earlier of this new debate on the heritability of IQ that's happening. And Lipton, don't say why, but you can guess why. The comments have now been put in a limited state. It's a video on IQ differences and the genetics of it, and YouTube put the comments in a limited state so that you can't comment anymore because you can guess the kind of thing that people might have been commenting on.
Well, I don't really want to comment on this issue too much, but what I will say is that...
Don't comment on it live. Not live.
Okay.
Careful now. Can't believe, the guy that played Father Ted, he died aged 45, my age. He was 45 when he died. Isn't that incredible? Dermot Morgan, 45.
Well, depends, Ed. If he walked in front of a bus, that's not really incredible. That's inevitable. How did he die?
Heart attack. On the last day of the filming of the third series of Father Ted.
All right.
And I think it was March 98 or something. So they were having they filmed that day, and then they were having a celebratory, having a party to celebrate the end of the filming the series, and then he just dropped dead. That's pretty extreme.
If you went quickly, though, you've got to say that's got to be the best
way
to go
what,
quickly.
You've just finished a job you love. You're partying with your mates. You're probably looking forward to a bit of a rest and a new season. And boom, you're gone. Sounds all right to me. That sounds all right. Can I ask Lipton a question?
Of course.
Lipton, I am your fascist genie, and I'm going to offer you a wish. You can have anything under my dictatorship. What policy would you instill, and why do you think it's the most important thing that we should be doing right now?
What policy would I instill? Well, I'm
going
have
one.
To the point. If I had that type of power, I would limit the franchise. Why would I limit the franchise? First reason, when England and America industrialized, they were not mass democracy. Democracy is not necessary for economic or social success. And one way to enhance the quality of democracy is to ensure that only competent people vote. It's hard to determine competence, but we can use specific criteria to weed out the unsavory people. So people who are on welfare should not vote. Public sector workers should not vote. Lobbyists should not vote. And probably some demographic groups should not vote either.
Would you be for IQ tests and personality tests and that kind of thing as well?
Well, yeah, I don't have a problem with an IQ test or using a degree as proxy for IQ. But if you're on welfare, if you're a public sector worker, you shouldn't vote. Lobbies should not vote. And some demographics probably should not vote either.
I agree. Yeah. I agree that if you are working for the state, then you are the government. You're part of the government. You're inherently motivated to vote for bigger government. And so you shouldn't be allowed to vote. And it seems to me obvious. But then when we did have that rule. I don't know when they abolished it. It might have been sort of 1918 or something. I don't know when they abolished that rule. Because Anthony Trollope was subject to that rule. Anthony Trollope worked for the post office or something like this. And so he was counted as a civil servant, so he wasn't allowed to vote. And he always was really unhappy about this, even though hardly anybody could vote in those days. But he always felt really hard done by that he was an educated, wealthy man, and he couldn't vote. But
well, don't you think a very immediate, a very quick, it wouldn't be a full solution, but it would help if no one was allowed to vote unless they had a pay slip. Because anyone who votes after they've seen their pay slip and the amount of tax that's taken, I think automatically becomes slightly more conservative.
Yes.
Leo has asked a good question. If RG's already the dictator, so what? So the idea with fascism is it's an emergency state and it's only temporary. So I'd only be in, cause suffering for an amount of time, rework the system and then hand it back to the people. I would say it was 5 years, and then I'd linger for 15, living in a gold-plated palace surrounded by prostitutes and cocaine. Sorry, Ed.
No, understandably. No, you would, of course, do that.
I'd milk it.
You'd milk it. Anybody would. I'm sure that Chairman Mao thought he'd only be in for 5 years. I'm very sure that the guy that was the dictator of Portugal, Salazar, he only got in because his mate was the dictator of Portugal, who was a general, and his mate was finding it really hard work. And Salazar was really clever and was a lecturer in law at the University of Coimbra or something.
I think it's well established the Palestinian Authority has had a 4-year term that's lasted, 24 years or whatever. So there is a precedent.
Yeah, you've got to you got, once you're in, then you realise that you've got to keep going. You've got to fix things. There's stuff to do. Like Margaret Thatcher, for example, realised at some point that she never ever wanted to stop being Prime Minister. That was just not yet. I mean, she'd been in for 11 and a half years and still she didn't feel it was time to go. And if she'd been in for 21 years, like Walpole was, I'm sure even then she'd feel that it wasn't really quite time to go. Not yet.
Someone said in the chat that Lipton fancied Mrs. T, but not at all. Yes. No, Lipton, you like the base. You like Anne Widdecombe.
No, when Margaret Thatcher died, I wrote a letter to the editor in the Jamaican Gleaner. It was titled, Margaret Thatcher had balls many men would envy.
Right, so I repeat, I don't think Lipton fancied Mrs. T. If you want to, this is your opportunity to correct me, Lipton.
No, she had big balls.
But the editor gave it that title.
Oh, it was published, was it, in a Jamaican national newspaper?
Yeah, around 12 years ago. I was in high school.
Okay. Did you tell your teacher? Did you tell your headmaster? Was he very proud of you? It's like Matthew.
Well, some people were. Some people liked my writings in high school. Some people did.
Matthews, I read your letter in the paper, man. That's very good.
He wasn't Welsh. He wasn't a Welsh headmaster. So stop it.
I hate to say, but there are as yet undiscovered aliens on Saturn.
I went to a smart high school. When I was in high school, there were people who knew about MAOA.
Meow.
The Mow-wow. Genetic variant and crime.
is that some sort of version of the herb I've not heard of?
No, MAOA. Well, let's forget it because you know what it is.
No, I don't know. I assume it's a good
drug. MAOA, that's a genetic variant that promotes criminal behavior.
Oh, I see. There are people that knew about that in your high school.
Yes.
Well, that's superb. Anyway, moving. Where were we? Nottingham University. We've got off topic a little bit, and I blame you. Nottingham University have shut down they're going to shut down their modern languages department. I don't think it's quite true that you have to have a modern language department to be a university, because they established things like University College London and so forth very specifically as scientific universities and only did science.
But yeah, that's slightly different. Yeah, because I worked at UMIS before it merged with the University of Manchester, and UMIS, University of Manchester Institute of Science and Technology. If you're founding charter is to be devoted to science, fair enough. You're not an all-inclusive university. But if you are claiming to be an all-inclusive university in terms of curriculum, you can't just arbitrarily get rid of certain subjects.
And presumably the reason why they're not making this is, I think this is quite interesting and worth talking about. The reason they're not making money is because they don't attract foreign students that pay massive tuition fees. That's it. Right. Now, I found this. When I was at Durham as an undergraduate, in my naivety as a very young man, I didn't really think about these things. I wasn't aware of these things. But you were much more aware of them when you were a postgraduate. And then you'd get talking to other lecturers, you know, more on a kind of a friendly basis rather than a sort of teacher-student relationship. And they tell you what was going on. So the divinity departments at Aberdeen, and I assume at Edinburgh as well, what they were propped up by was basically Americans that wanted to do PhDs in theology. And they'd get money from their local church or whatever, their local community. And it was cheaper to go to a good British university than even a not very good American one in terms of the fees. And so they would come over to Scotland and they would do their PhD. And there was one guy, I forget his name, John something or other, who was professor of theology at Oxford. And Aberdeen University headhunted him and brought him in to supervise PhDs full time. So like, no, you don't have to do research. You don't have to publish anything. You can get out of that rat race. You can relax, right? Do a few papers if you feel like it. Write a book if you want. We'll give you some time in the week to do your writing, whatever you like, but no pressure. All you have to do is continuously supervise American PhD, fundamentalist Christians, basically, that are doing meaningless PhDs on, you know, whether Christians should like Harry Potter or some shit. and just do that all the time, and we will pay you big bucks. And that's why Divinity in a lot of these universities has no problem. It's propped up by American international students paying 20 grand for tuition fees.
Yeah, but Ed, the vast majority of English universities are propped up by Chinese overseas students specifically. And what frustrates me is British students are to some extent subsidized by that. But no one ever asks. I'm guessing, I don't know the exact figures, but I'd estimate about 40% of all university employees now are admin staff. 40 to 45%. And a good half to three quarters of them are completely unnecessary. And that's what the whole Ponzi scheme supports. These useless people who don't teach, don't research. The admin they do is duplicated by most academics. I never did an admin job as an academic that wasn't basically covering for an administrator. So there's this huge amount of universities that just waste.
Right, and they're propping up jobs that are non-jobs, that are waste jobs. Now, you're quite right. I remember even while I was at Aberdeen, and that was over 20 years ago, the number of secretaries in the Divinity Department expanded.
But it's not... there are... The admin people that were good were actually people like secretaries who did something practical. But there's a whole faculty level of middle administrators who do absolutely nothing, and worse than that, they chair things like so-called ethics committees that oversee research, and they just get in the way, and they have to justify their own existence. They set up dyslexia centres, and on and on and on it goes, and they're an absolute drain on the university sector.
One thing that happened, and the Chinese students, you know, one thing, I was once, when I, in my third year as a postgrad, I was invigilating an exam. And there were two of us. There was a big hall, right? I was in charge of invigilating one half of the room, and somebody else was invigilating the other half of the room. And I said, okay, right, time to start now. And these students, some of them, got out. This is a test. You don't always have books with you, right? There's no books with you. You learn your quotes. You know what I mean? Like that was you don't. There's no books. And they got out these dictionaries, and I was like, what the actual fuck is this? And I said, what are you doing? And I took this. This person had a English to Chinese dictionary or something on the desk. And no one had told me about this. I said, you can't have that. You can't have a dictionary in the exam. What is this? And apparently, I was subsequently told that no. You know, to basically.
Yeah, but well before then, English literature A level used to be you had to memorize huge chunks, not just the quotes. The punctuation had to be correct, and then they went to open book. You'd have your copy of the Shakespeare play in front of you, because it's phallocentric and patriarchal to expect someone to memorize a quote.
When I was at Glasgow University, we were in a class and the teacher posed a question and some of us decided to answer. And then he said, okay, the only people who should answer are the people who are not white men. So I wanted to answer the other question, and he said, the only people who should answer are people who are not men.
Unbelievable. What do you think about this? Did you hear about this girl who had got a DPhil in biology from Oxford? She was about 28, 29, something like that. Juliet Turner, that was her name. And she put this tweet up on Twitter, like boasting about the fact that she'd got a PhD. And then when people responded by basically saying, you're showing off and you're crap, then she got terribly upset. And she said, oh, look, the abuse I've had to deal with. And I just thought, like, that's just bragging. That's just showing off. And aren't we generally taught to go on Twitter and say, look at me, I've just got a doctorate? Isn't that showing off? And I just thought that's bad. We're taught not to behave like that. We're taught to not show off. And all these people, these young people, were saying to me, no, you don't understand. No, that's perfectly normal behavior.
No, it isn't. No, look, you should share your achievements with your families and friends. If you are applying for a job, impress the interviewer. On Twitter, there's no need to say, okay, I have a PhD. I have $1 million. That's irrelevant. People like to do it. I don't know why.
No, I was told that I was being completely unreasonable, and indeed that my only motivation is that I'm jealous of the fact that she has a PhD, even though I have a PhD. And I couldn't understand this. And it was particularly young people that were saying, oh, well, what would you have done at that age? Wouldn't you have And I was like, well, I thought to myself, well, Twitter existed not when I got my PhD, when I got my docentship it existed, which is a thing above PhDs that you have in Scandinavia. I didn't go on Twitter and put a tweet out about it. I could have done. I just thought that's showing off. That's like the same mindset as those Christmas letters that twats used to send out in the 90s where they'd say, oh, my daughter's got the best possible GCSEs and my son's got the best possible... But what would we do without our cleaner, Mrs. Johnson? Oh, we'd die.
Well, Ed, it's also very difficult to actually fail a PhD now because your test, you have reviews at the end of each year. And the Viva is no longer pass-fail. You'll get endless ability to or opportunities to revise the final thesis.
That's incredible.
So, no, and it's there's no jeopardy incredible. Anymore. It's depressing as
that's
hell.
That's incredible. That is well. Whenever they brought that in, every PhD that was written and released after that has to be considered suspect. They do that with the graduate course. I know they do it with graduate courses and they do it with masters. I didn't know they were doing that with PhDs mm-hmm. now.
I don't know when this changed.
So you have to be very determined to fucking fail in order to not get
it. Yeah, my understanding when I did it, you'd have pass, like you'd have like just pass as it is, and that was very rare. You then have pass with minor corrections, and that's what most people got, which is what I got. And the thing that was considered like shameful, the thing that was considered the equivalent of a bit like, you know, sort of the PhD equivalent of getting a 2-2, as it were, right, was pass with major corrections. And so it means they pass it, but you've got you have like a year.
I was overseeing an examination and I was browbeaten by two other members of staff and I stopped doing them after that. The candidates had major corrections, but basically it was a failed PhD, but rather than fail that person, they were given a year and a half, I think it was, to do major. And the worst thing was they were given such direct instructions as to what to correct that it was basically done for them. It was going to take a lot of effort. But there was no ambiguity about what they needed to do. So therefore, how is that an independent piece of work anymore?
True. But then my understanding was that below major corrections, there was fail, but recommendation for a lower degree.
Yeah, but that hardly have that's a minuscule then, percentage now that happens.
And then below that, there was just outright fail. So for you to fail it, the PhD thesis had to be considered below MPhil thesis level.
Yeah, but you get my point about when you've got a review every year, there's no jeopardy at the end. Just like there used to be, I did final examinations, and if I'd have had a mental breakdown during the exam, I would have failed my degree. But now it's continuous assessment. If you're doing essays every other few weeks and you get a cumulative score, then that was Leeds. No jeopardy whatsoever.
There's no finals anymore.
No.
Oh my good God.
Exactly. And most universities I'm aware of now are it's continuous assessment. It's patriarchal and phallocentric to make people do exams.
I presume if you do balls it up, then you can just plead mental illness and get another year.
Well, you get endless extensions for each essay. So you never have a real deadline for an essay. And I felt sorry. Some students just played the system for all they were worth. And some more honest students didn't play the system and were at a disadvantage. It's just completely wrong.
We had to write an essay a week at undergrad. And those days you couldn't, you know, you had to get to the theology department by 10 a.m. and hand the bloody thing in.
Yeah, but they weren't. Most of those weren't assessed.
They weren't. No, they didn't contribute. No, you know, the assessment was entirely the end of the year exam.
Yeah, I remember doing A levels that were incredibly difficult because it was like three or four intense days, and they were just final exams. My final university exams were intense and, you know, stressful. And guess what? That was why it was worth getting, but not anymore.
No. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, what can we do? We just end up like Nottingham University. We just end up a waste of time. Just might as well just burn ourselves to the ground.
Well, the only interesting thing is, you know, with ChatGPT and stuff and AI, they're going to have to start making students go back into the exam hall. Otherwise, how do you prove they haven't just used AI to do their essay?
Yeah. Like, or books. You know, what fecks me off is the concept of a... a ghost writer. If you can't write a book, don't write a book.
I agree.
The idea of getting someone, paying someone to write your book for you and then putting your name on it as though you've written it, it's just lying. Like, I'm writing a brilliant new book at the moment about borderline personality disorder. I've been writing it for about 4 days. It's writing itself. I mean, I'm on 25,000 words. I mean, it's just all coming out. But I'm at least writing the bloody thing.
And really high quality piece of work.
Yeah, I always find if you keep track of the wordage rather than the quality, that's the way to go, Ed.
No, the quality is very good, and it just happens to be that I'm writing it quite quickly. I've been working on a book for a month. What have you written? Well, I've written 10 words, but they're bloody good words. You would believe how good. Imagine saying that to your agent. What have you actually written in the last year? The deadline's coming. Well, I've written a sentence.
No, let me give you this joke. So I'm writing a book now. I'm really editing the book now, over 200 words. But I published The Corporate Myth. So I wrote The Corporate Myth and two other pocket books. After writing The Corporate Myth and editing it, I decided to apply for some book grant, and I did not get it because you only get the grant to provide you with the opportunity to write. You don't get the grant to publish the book. So there are people who will apply for a grant, get the grant because they want time off to write, but they might never publish the book. But if you have a book that's published and you want help to promote it, you don't get the grant.
Well, don't write the book. No, write the book. Don't tell them you have. Get the grant and then job done.
Yeah, that's what I should have done, yes.
Before I forget, Lipton, I think we should have a moment silence for Jimmy Cliff died.
Oh, yes. Unfortunately, he was 81.
Yeah. Good age, but I think we should have a moment silence.
Before we have this moment of silence, who is Jimmy Cliff?
Jimmy Cliff, the great reggae singer.
I've never heard
Racist, Ed. You don't know who Jimmy Cliff is.
I've never heard of him, but I'll give you 10 seconds. Poor old Jimmy.
Yes.
Very famous Jamaican.
Yeah, he's really famous. Jimmy Cliff was really famous.
Not as famous as Marcus Garvey.
No, Jimmy Cliff was pretty famous.
Yeah.
Not as famous as him, you know, like, what's that guy called? Benjamin Zephaniah.
Well, no, Zephaniah wasn't... look, Zephaniah had no talent, sorry.
Was he actually Jamaican? Yeah, was Zephaniah Jamaican?
Yes. No. Be nice to your turkeys this Christmas, because turkeys want to have fun. Turkeys are wicked, and every turkey has a mum. Why didn't they make him poet laureate? I will never know.
Yeah, Zephaniah wasn't...
Well, at least he's better than Carol Ann Duffy. At least he rhymes.
Wasn't he found guilty of domestic abuse?
Who can undo?
Allegedly. No, Zephaniah.
I don't think you can be allegedly found guilty of...
I'm saying allegedly just in case I'm wrong. I seem to remember.
Well, he's dead, so you can say he's dead. You can say what you like about him. But
is he dead? I didn't realise.
Yeah, he's dead.
Yeah, he's dead. He's dead. I have
10 seconds for him.
No, that's really just wasting airtime. We've got... important things to talk about in the next 5 minutes while Richard just sits
I've got a PhD, a pretty hard dick. See, I'm not saying much, but it's there, you know. I'm just like, it's growing, it's gestating, and when it comes out, fucking hell. Amazing.
Ed, read the BPD Love Thrones reread it for material. I did, and indeed Richard has read it, and we discussed it the other day. The concept of a vulnerability hangover, what I was amazed by, Richard, with regard to BPD girls, is there is nothing, no actual formal research, only clinical observations of them mainly having male friends, only clinical observations, no actual formal statistical research based on a sample. So that,
what qualifies that as a laboratory observation?
No, not a laboratory observation, but you would get a sample of a couple of hundred of these girls, and then you would ask them questions about, you know, their friendships or whatever, and then that would be a reasonable. And they haven't done that with regard to that question.
Sorry, because I have a window at the top of my basement.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, you could pull them in. If sample, you say you haven't...
sample size is a bit small in your case. If you could expand it, that would be helpful.
Have you seen my Fritzl sized basement, Richard?
And then below his basement, there's another basement that he's dug out, so he could fit quite a few of them in. You know, there's the basement and there's the oubliette, and that oubliette goes down a long way.
The catacombs.
Yeah, the catacombs beneath Paul's house, where naked borderlines run around, cutting themselves and tattooing themselves and screaming. That's to be taken into account. But yeah,
that's some research that needs doing, though.
It does need doing. It's not actually been done. There is some interesting research on subtypes of borderline, functional versus schizoid versus some other one. No, it's going well. I mean, it's very obvious to me that Mary Shelley was a complete, absolute, total borderline. I mean, that's just clear.
Good job she married a really well-adjusted husband. She didn't marry.
Did she not marry him? I thought she married him.
When they related, or am I getting confused?
Are we talking about Anne Boleyn?
No, I was talking about
Mary Shelley.
Woman that wrote Frankenstein.
And Byron.
Sorry, I'm really not with it today. Sorry, guys.
Byron had sex with his sister. Byron had sex with his half-sister.
That's right. And Mary Shelley was also involved, but they never got married.
Her name was Augusta Milbank. They were apart in their childhood, and so then like the Westermark effect didn't hit in, and so of course when they meet, then they have these really intense feelings for each other, and so they had sex. Yeah. So he was absolute degenerate, Byron. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Like, it's amazing. I went to Butt Rint where he went in Albania, and it was very interesting. Greek ruins, and so on. But not Anne Boleyn, Mike Bike, you know, Anne Boleyn, or Anne Bullen, who herself, I'm sure, probably had borderline personality. But I was writing in the book today on witches.
Vera Lynn either, that's different.
Yeah, Vera Lynn, that's a completely different person. She was the one that sang about the bluebirds over the white cliffs of Dover. Even though bluebirds don't live in England, they live in America. So I don't know what that was about. Why she would think there would be bluebirds in Dover. I don't know, she's wrong. She was a liar. It actually makes it quite difficult for me to take her seriously. She's going to get something as obvious as that. Right? I'm saying hummingbirds. Hummingbirds don't exist in Europe. No, hummingbirds in America. I saw one once in Utah, and it hurt itself and it was lying on the ground. And all its hummingbird friends were like buzzing around this bush, but it got hurt. Have you seen a hummingbird, Paul? You in America?
Yes, I've been in America. I've seen hummingbirds. A bit dull, they just hover.
Chipmunks were interesting. When I was on the, I was sitting in the Grand Canyon, not in it, I mean, like on one of the sides, and I was eating a sandwich. And this chipmunk, they're so tame, they just got on my shoulder and started eating my sandwich. Alvin, Simon, and Theodore. Anyway,
I've got a phobia about possum tails.
I've not seen one of those.
Oh, they're disgusting. They're like rat tails, but much bigger and thicker.
America.
They're bald tails. Possum.
I thought that was an Australian thing, a possum.
No, America, yeah, possums. They're really ugly creatures.
Yeah, I've been invited to go to America next year, but the problem is tipping. And I don't want to tip. I constitutionally object to being lied to by restaurants. And so if what it says on the menu is not what I pay, that's a lie. It's manipulative. It's as though girls with BPD design American restaurants. And they manipulate you into parting with more money than they've advertised.
I've never seen you pay a bill anyway, Ed.
No, should we just stay on here till it gets to 1,000? We're almost there. It's 2,000, sorry.
Yes, we should stay.
Sorry?
We should stay.
Things we should talk about. It's currently on 1,868. You want it for your own personal reasons to be 2,000.
Well, we can talk about Qatar. Qatar has been spending billions in the higher education system in America. There was a scandal at Northwestern. Qataris, they're spending billions in America. They're sponsoring higher education. And there was a scandal at Northwestern. The school got money from Qatar, so they did not criticize Qatar.
Right. So basically, what you're saying is third world countries are able to pressurize universities into what they do and into their policies. I mean, this is really not good.
Not at all. Just like many of those far right accounts from India and Bangladesh.
Yeah, I heard about this. And there's loads of them, and they make money out of doing it, and they're getting paid. Exactly. They've just got random people in India doing right-wing or left-wing propaganda as the mood takes them. Now, I can't bother to wait until we're on 2000. It's fine. All right, chaps, I'd like to thank you for tuning in, and we will see you all next week and so forth. And tally-ho, and goodbye.
Yeah. Goodbye.